Blog Talk Radio.
Well, as usual, nobody's here at 7 o'clock, so I'll play this little bit of song, then I'm going to shut it down for the night, because I'm not playing with this anymore. It's not my show, it's somebody else's show, and I'm tired of it. Well, Scott decided to show up, so Scott, it's all yours. There you go. As soon as it pops
hey,
up.
Hey, all right. How are you doing, Don?
Not good, Scott. We got a 7 o'clock
I'm
show,
sorry.
Nobody's up on time. That's pitiful. I'm getting tired of it. But you carry on.
All right. Hey, so this week, I was gone last week. There's been a lot of I guess you say changes going on in the UAW as far as how they're looking at our contracts, I believe. This last week that came up to discussion of the plant closings, and there's a lot of people upset. And then some people have been out, the locals. People are moving to make up signs to support Lordstown. I do have a letter that I got a copy of from Mary Barra that I would like to read in a little bit. And I would
well,
give you Mary Barra's.
Hold on for a second. Let me play this guy. Somebody tweeted this to me and to play this for tonight, so let me get this. It's a laid-off GM worker from Lordstown.
Lawmakers grilling General Motors CEO Mary Barra on Capitol Hill. Thousands of Americans will be laid off, and five plants will be shut down in 2019. Joining me to discuss the company's latest blow right before the holidays is a nine-year GM employee fighting for his job, Tommy Willico. Thank you very much for joining us, Tommy. We really appreciate it this morning.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So, first of all, tell us about, you know, how are you and your coworkers doing right now? How did you get the news initially?
So I actually had a buddy of mine call me up, and, you know, he was in the meeting, and he told me, you know, what was said in the meeting. But I kind of like, you know, I feel like I've seen this coming because, you know, it started off with the third shift, you know, on the same day President Trump was inaugurated. That's when I lost my job. And then the second shift was laid off the same day they said that the Blazer that we were hoping we were going to get, the Chevy Blazer, was going to be built in Mexico and we weren't going to get it. And then, you know, with this last devastating news, you know, General Motors basically unallocated or closing its doors, you know, March 1st. That was just like, you know, the straw that broke the camel's back.
And, you know, you don't just take this personally. You're a dad of three. This is something that's run in your family. Your dad also was an auto worker?
Yes, he was. Yeah, my father, he retired out there with 42.7 years of service. I kind of was taking over the family legacy. I was out there 9 years before I got laid off, and I thought I was going to be able to have the chance to retire just like my father did.
Yeah. What about the community? How is this impacting the entire community, even those that don't work specifically at the plant impacted?
People in our area, I mean, they know that General Motors is like the heart of our community. And, you know, if you take the heart away from the body falls. And we're really afraid that, you know, the community is just not going to be able to bounce back after this. And, you know.
Listen, this is what Barra had to say. This is what she said with a meeting with lawmakers. Listen.
I feel like we had a very productive meeting. It was good for me to be able to go through everything that is going on. We have several new products launching right now and upcoming, so we have made tremendous investment. And the thing that I best need to do to make sure I'm living up to that is to make sure General Motors is strong going forward.
Okay. She wants to make General Motors strong moving forward, but not in any of these areas. She's talking about new jobs overseas, investments overseas. What about hardworking Americans like you and your family and all those there in your community? Does that make you angry when you hear her say things like that?
Yeah, it definitely does, because, you know, me and my union brothers and sisters, we proved time after time that we could build the quality that they asked for. You know, we could build the quantity that they asked for, and we're willing to work with them. You know, we understand that it's a business at the end of the day. And, you know, our shop, you know, our shop chairman and, you know, our president, they're willing to work with General Motors and do whatever we, you know, we can to be able to just be able to, you know, build that quality car. And we feel that we deserve it. We feel that we deserve to get another vehicle in General Motors, because all the hard work we've done for over 50 years. You know?
We're out of time, but do you have a message for President Trump?
President Trump, you know, our area definitely needs help. You know, you're the president of the United States. You're the CEO. Please start holding these companies like General Motors and, you know, Harley Davidson accountable for their actions. You know, I feel like a lot of corporate greed is going on, and we know you have the power to help us.
All right. He is trying to do that. Tommy, thank you so much. I love what you said about taking the heart out of the body. We appreciate it. Good luck to you and your family, especially here during the holidays.
All right. And we got a lot of people on the switchboard. If you want to call in now. What is that noise?
Scott. I have no idea. I just came back on.
Okay. Don't wait 15 minutes to 8 to call, because I'm not going to answer your phone call. So if you got something to say, get it in now. We're going to 8 o'clock and 8 o'clock sharp.
Gotcha.
Go ahead.
Hey, this last week, so he got me a copy of a letter from Mary Barra. And I'm going to read this letter. Team, this has been a challenging week for many of us in the GM family. The impact of Monday's announcement on the lives of our colleagues, their families, and our communities in the United States and Canada is very real. And I understand this to my core, as you've no doubt seen. The news triggered extensive public and political conversations. You are likely receiving questions from family and want to share some context. In the U.S., some of us have suggested we made these decisions because we do not care about manufacturing or living up to our commitments here. This is simply not true. We issued a statement publicly reaffirming our commitment to maintain a strong manufacturing presence in the U.S. and noted that we are taking these steps to secure the company's future today and for generations to come. In Canada, our team has reiterated our commitment to transforming our workforce at our Markhorn Technical Center and in maintaining quality at our facilities. We've made hard decisions across the globe, in South America, Europe, and Korea, just to name a few. Each had its challenges. Any announcement impacts our team members is difficult. As I've said many times, as we navigate through these values and behaviors more than ever, thank you again for your support, Mary Barra. And if you want to make a comment to Mrs. Barra,
all right.
CEO of General Motors, sure.
Let me get Dick on. Dick, you're on. Go ahead now. Go ahead, Scott.
Okay. You may email Mary Barra, and this is the email address, Office of Mary Barra, OFFICE.
Scott, we know how to spell OF.
Okay.
Scott, we know how
Mary
to spell
Mary Barra at contactgm.com. So I don't think that they're living up to their values that they so much want to tell us auto workers about. I think it's shameful. You invested more money outside the country. It's just shameful what they're doing. And as usual, they wait till between Thanksgiving and Christmas time to bear out bad news. Merry Christmas, huh? Like I said, there's a group out of Lordstown that's been putting up signs. Fort Wayne's making up some T-shirts to support brothers and sisters. I think it's a great idea. We don't know who's next, honestly.
I don't know.
So it's interesting. But this last week's been a lot of turmoil. I think Lordstown had Detroit Hamtramck had a rally protesting the plant closures outside. So there's some things that are going on, but I don't know if it's going to make the impact that we need right now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think Lordstown, we saw it coming when they started idling down. Like the fellow said in that interview with Fox Business, you know, they were there. You kind of know what happens when you're at the plants. Hell, you've been through a slowdown. You've been through almost a shutdown back in your day at Flint Assembly, right?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I worked with some guys at Grand Blanc in 99 that were from the truck plant. They were just waiting to get back.
Right.
That's when they lost the G-Van, right?
Yep, the G-Van.
And people who don't know, the G-Van was the big old full-size van, which I think they make it now, but I think it's made more for like a people carrier, if I remember right.
No, I don't know.
I think you can order them.
One in years.
Yeah, I think. Well, they're not like they used to be. They just put different rows of seats in them. I think you can get like 13 passenger vans. That's all they are, the passenger van. They're not made to, you know,
right,
tricked out beds and stuff like that. None of that. None of that custom stuff anymore. It's just a people hauler. Airports use them, I think. But so anyway,
Dick
so that's
is
that.
On.
We're right with that. Oh, hello, Dick.
Oh, hi, Scott. Hey, I have
How
a message
today
for you.
Okay.
I talked with Jim earlier today, and he's got the flu.
Oh.
Oh no.
He's pretty congested up. He didn't post anything at all on our Facebook page today, which is really unusual. I sent him a number of things this morning, and apparently he's kind of trying to get his congestion down.
Oh, yeah.
But it was
right,
really weird because usually I'll send him a bunch of stuff. He'll put it up, and he puts his own stuff up, and absolutely nothing since last night.
Wow. Well, there's some people been getting sick around us lately, too. That I think that creeping crud's going around, so.
Whatever it is, and he's got a congestion problem anyway. So.
Right.
Anyhow, when I talked to him, I said, you know, what did you do? Are you dying or what? And he sounded pretty bad, so he said to tell you guys that he was taking the day off from, I guess, all of us.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Get better, Jimmy. Get better.
Yeah. Has, you know, I wasn't here last week. You guys did a show. Did anybody read the letter from Tony Dites?
From who, Scott?
Tony Dites.
No.
Oh, you mean Terry Dittus, the vice president of GM?
Oh, okay. Yeah, him. Did anybody read that letter?
No, either Jim or I read the letter, but it's all over the Facebook pages.
Okay. Well, then I won't read that because he put out a couple of letters. And
yeah, that's been up there. And then I found today an article by Gary Jones in an op-ed opinion in some newspaper where he was coming across this actually giving some financial figures in terms of how much money they've made since the bankruptcy and that kind of stuff, and kind of taking a hardliner tone. But then again, you had the meeting today of the Poll Town people in a facility called Swords and Plowshares, where they met today. And WSWS is having a big rally down at the Eastern Market at 2 o'clock today about the plant closings. I did a search to see if anything had showed up yet, and I'm thinking, I don't know if the News of the Free Press will cover it in the papers, but I'm kind of hoping that they videoed the damn thing and one can look at the video cast of it.
Right.
So there were two protests in the last 2 days. Now, the protest at Poll Town, I don't know how many people were there. Probably not a lot. I forget that, you know, they were in this facility. And then I don't know about WSWS because they were saying in a newsletter that they've contacted the people that they know at Lordstown and in these different plants and asked them to come to Detroit for that thing that they're doing. So I assume there'll be something on their website tomorrow about what transpired down there. But then in my wandering around late this afternoon, I found this letter, and it didn't say anything but authored by Gary Jones, and I thought, oh, is there a newspaper reporter called Gary Jones? And then as I read down through it, I saw it was a submitted opinion that he put out to this particular publication. I like articles where they talk about money and numbers and facts. I don't want to hear a bunch of opinions of people. But he did express that, and I'm not hyping him up because I look at everything from coming out of Solidarity House at this point in time anyhow as more or less some shape or form of propaganda. They've got to make some response. And I honestly feel it had to come from him because you got this mobilization going on. Brian has been out there now. He's put up videos. I've looked at his videos. And he seemed to gather more people down there over the past 2 or 3 days every day. And the people were videoed on his video as coming out there, telling people, come on out and join us. But at least he wasn't out there by himself Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. So that's encouraging for him that he had more than just himself.
Right.
So I think UAW has to say something. They can't just stay silent. And all of a sudden this thing pops up in something I never heard of before, but there it was, unless he submitted that to the News and the Free Press, because they've got that op-ed column where anybody can turn in 300 or more or less words, and if they feel it's newsworthy, they'll publish it. So at least he said something in the last 2 or 3 days.
Right, right. Local 2209, which is Fort Wayne.
No, Fort Wayne.
They took a strike vote. I know going into a contract year, you always put a strike vote up. But I think this one was a little bit early, wasn't it?
Well, it's up to the local union. You know, if you're a president or a chairman and you're getting a lot of insurrection in your plant, one thing to do is build a diversionary bonfire and let people let off steam. And what better way to do that, since people seem to be getting more and more militant as time goes by, why not just give them a strike vote to vote on? At least it gives them the satisfaction of having done something. And that may be what Thibodeau down there, the chairman, is really doing.
Good point.
Right.
There's nothing wrong with it. I mean,
no.
And if people feel better for it, then good.
And it could be a sign of solidarity and support for brothers and sisters from other places
That has to be authorized by the local union.
John, you're on with us. We have John with us right now. Go ahead, John.
John Barbosa?
Yep, it's me.
Hi, John.
How you doing?
Hi, John.
All right.
Hey, everybody.
So,
carry on, troops.
I understand what you're saying with Fort Wayne taking a strike vote. I'm sure their executive board down there at that local agreed to do it. I just thought that the timing was kind of punctual in its timing in which they took the strike vote. That was just a thought.
Yeah.
Mary Barra was in the Senate this last week, and I'm going to tell you right now, I don't know the entourage that was set with her, but she didn't answer a lot of questions. I told her not to. And she didn't say a whole lot. She talked, but she didn't say a whole lot. Talked about keeping the company strong and going forward. She says that she understands how this impacts the community.
Yeah, right.
I don't think she does. I agree. I agree with that sentiment. I think full well they know what they're doing. They're doing it by plan. There's been a lot of thought what they're doing here. And it's sad. It really is. Because normally CARS, the Center for Automotive Research,
right,
usually has some good numbers. And I have not found them this last week. Going back to when they were going to do the bankruptcy, CARS had just pages and pages of information and numbers about the impact that the auto industry would have if they all went bankrupt. I would like to see what CARS comes up with, the community effect on Warren, Detroit. We know it's going to be devastating to Detroit and devastating to Lordstown, which we drove by going to Maryland last week. It's a big complex. And then you have Baltimore. How does this impact the communities? Because historically it's been about 7 people are tied to every one auto worker in a support method of one way or another, whether it be power supplier, logistics,
or community businesses.
Yes. And this is going to, when Mary Barra talks about, how she knows how this impacts, people, I agree with you. She don't. Because she don't care about the communities and the people who may not ever buy a General Motors vehicle again.
Well, I think she does and doesn't care, actually.
Right.
I mean, it's impossible not to know. Look at all the malls, Scott, just within a 50-mile circle of Detroit that were supported by auto worker paychecks that are gone.
Right.
I mean, Macomb Mall, Oakland Mall, Eastland Mall. I mean, these malls just disappeared during the last 12 months or so. That was all guys like us.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, she's got to know that. And as far as CARS goes, I was hoping to see more information from CARS like we used to get when Sean McClendon ran that outfit, who was an economist, and he would talk in terms of numerical impacts on things. I mean, there's a lot of reporters right now who are saying, all right, General Motors got this much money from the government, but if you look at a comparison of GM's performance, what Mary Barra is using is their numbers between 2016 and 2017. Now, one of the most significant numbers when you look at their financial numbers is cost of sales. And they lost a lot of money in 2017 in terms of cost of sales. Now, one might be tempted to say that's because of the high labor costs, but it is not. Cost of sales is everything that they spend money on. So if she goes off and spends $12 billion from the middle of 2014 for 5 years to make Cadillac the premier luxury car, and then you turn around and find out 4 years later it turns out to be a flop, which meant she spent the better part of $12 billion on that in those 4 years. So she closes up New York and brings them back, people think, to the tech center, but they're not going to be at the tech center. They're going to be across the road on Van Dyke in the old Campbell Ewald advertising building, which means she had to buy that. And so she's setting the same operation she had in New York up across the street from the tech center at enormous cost. But she set aside $12.5 billion, and that would be prorated over 5 years. Well, the 5 years is coming to an end. So she's just basically may as well have taken $12.5 billion out in a 55-gallon drum in the backyard and burned it as trash because it's produced nothing. That's part of cost of sales, along with warranty work and recalls.
Right.
And really, you know, when you look at your profit-sharing check, those kinds of costs of sales, warranty work, recall, any screw-up that management made, and I think $12 billion is a pretty significant screw-up, should not be charged against the net profit that calculates your profit-sharing. That's gross culpable mismanagement. That has nothing to do with the hardworking people in the plant who are producing all this wealth for her to take out and burn in the 55-gallon drum every year. Whether it be recalls or warranty work, those things should be subtracted and not be included in the net profit calculation. Now, to the SEC, they can do that. But, I mean, the UAW should be negotiated that you guys are going to have to eat this money and pay them their profit sharing because they didn't create the warranty work. My people did not create the recalls. You people did. If you don't believe that, read paragraph 8. I didn't want to go on with that, but those kinds of numbers, if Sean McLennan was still running cars, we'd be reading reports like that right now. And to the comment about what's the impact on the community, he used to report to the Federal Reserve on those kinds of things in pages and pages of numbers, in the kinds of things where if you're going to remove from the Lordstown plant 2,500 paychecks, which apparently they've done with the two shifts they've removed, now they got one left that they're going to get rid of. But if you're going to remove 2,500 paychecks in the community, then, yes, you look at things like grocery stores and malls and car repair shops. And besides the fact of the other kinds of costs to the community, which means the taxes that come off of those payroll checks, and then you look at the state of Michigan or the state of Ohio, Senator Sherrod Brown down there, He's looking at that and saying, look, there's 2,500 paychecks right now that are not paying state tax. And as far as El Presidente in Washington, if 2,500 people ain't not either working, then they ain't not either paying income tax, are they? And nobody seems to want to talk about any of that stuff, do they? I'm done. Hello?
Scott. Well, I don't know what happened.
Okay, all right, well.
He's back, hold on. He just got bounced. Scott, you're back on.
Okay, thank you. Hey, okay. I'm going to ask you. They come up with a new word, which would abrogate some language that that's in the national contract. And I
like
the new word.
It's unallocated.
Yes, sir.
The reason they had to do that is because there's language in the contract that says if they use the word plant closing, they have to negotiate that with the UAW. So what they did is said, for now, we're going to use the word unallocated work, and then we're going to take action on that word.
Right.
And then we will be compelled, before we go closing anything, to negotiate that with the UAW in 2019.
Correct. And I think this is all part of a bargaining chip that, in the timing of this announcement coming forward.
Well, I agree with you, but I think there's another reason they're doing this. Is I think they're doing it now, and they use that word unallocated because it's a form of mind framing or brainwashing the workforce in general before even the Christmas holiday to prepare people for the coming ratification process.
Right.
I mean,
right.
They did a lot of work finding a word and giving it to the legal department in GM and saying, if we take this action and we base it on unallocated, can we be sued? And the lawyer said no. And apparently the UAW lawyers agree with that. So then what happens is you create all this insecurity and anxiety in the workforce. And I know everybody's mad and they're upset. But a lot of that is driven from you got a lot of high seniority people at Poletown who are fundamentally just being thrown into the street.
Right.
And at Lordstown. And then you've got these other plants who are facing it. So that makes for not a very happy Christmas.
No. Baltimore, Warren Transmission, and then, of course, the whole complex up in Canada. Yeah. But
Warren Transmission is my home plant.
That was the old gear and axle?
I had to transfer my seniority. There were five of us on the staff from Local 235 Chevrolet Gear and Axle, and Jokic called us all in one at a time and said, where do you want to place your seniority? Because Dick Dauch now has got his own contract. It's no longer a GM plant. And you still work for GM. So we had to pick a local where we wanted our seniority to be. And, of course, I picked 909. So Frank Hammer and I are both orphans in a sense.
Wow.
Because that's Frank's local, too.
Well,
or it was his original.
For what it's worth, I mean, so we don't sugarcoat words for people here, unallocated means you've got no new product. They're going to close your plant.
No, they don't go that far. They just said, at this time, there is no product allocated for your plant past this date.
Right.
They don't use the word close.
No.
You won't find GM using the word close.
No. No. But that's what they're meaning.
Well, I understand.
Right. That's what I'm trying to tell people. It's just a nice word for saying that they're planning on closing. But unallocated, I just thought that was a very cute word to come up with it.
Oh, yeah, they had to do a lot of legal searching to find a way to do this.
Yeah.
And they found that word, unallocated.
You've been around national negotiations a lot in the past.
Yep.
And you know that when they look at each plant on a singular version of each plant, that they know what they're going to run and how many products are going to, maybe it's a future product or an unannounced product going forward, they allocate work to these plants for 5 years, 7 years, some of them 10 years.
Well, the life product, right.
Right. And then they'll give, and then in the contract, in the unpublished letters where you find this information, is, let's say, for example, Lordstown, the product, current product run through 2019, and then there'll be an asterisk that adds and future work at this date to be addressed and talked about or whatever. But they'll always leave that little kicker, so to say, on the backside that they talk about a new product or extending another product past that run date.
Well, there's another caveat, though, Scott, and it says, given no unforeseen circumstances.
Right. Like
you'll always find that in there when they talk about future.
Right.
We will do this, we'll do that, comma, unless unforeseen circumstances prevail, or something to that effect.
Right. Like Oklahoma. Oklahoma, unfortunately, got hit by a big tornado.
Yep.
And General Motors decided at that time that they weren't going to reinvest the money. They were going to move the products elsewhere.
Yep.
And they closed down Oklahoma.
So none of that language meant anything, did it?
No, it did not.
That's
which
unforeseen circumstances. Market conditions are unforeseen circumstances. That's the doorway out of what looks to be a commitment. There's always a release valve. Market conditions or unforeseen circumstances. So you can say, oh, we're good here for the next 10 years, but you got to read past the comma.
Gotcha.
Don't forget,
you know,
Scott, John's on. John, you have anything to add?
Yeah, John.
Well, you know, I haven't been around as long as Dick, but I've paid attention, real close attention to things in my life. And ever since I came back home from the war, I was pretty bitter after seeing the nasty things that our government does, even to our own soldiers. And, you know, these large corporations have been playing games and have declared war on workers long, long ago.
Right.
And this is just another tool that they're using to try to gain public support. They know contract talks are coming up. And I absolutely believe that this is a ploy. I think what's going to end up happening is they intend to shut Hamtramck down. It's an old facility, very old facility.
1985.
And I don't think that one will survive. I think that they're going to use it as a bargaining chip. Lordstown is a little newer facility. I think they'll wind up keeping that open.
Oh, no, Lordstown's 1960.
I thought Lordstown was a newer facility.
No. Well, it's
really
new. I mean, I was working when it opened up, when it first opened up. But Poletown was built and opened. Poletown is only a 15-minute ride away from my home plant in Hamtramck. And it's right along the freeway. And they destroyed a whole community. They went to the mayor of Detroit. It was the oldest Polish community in Michigan. And you had a church in there that was 100 years old and bulldozed everything to the ground. It was a bitter, bitter fight in Detroit over that. And then Roger Smith bought the latest, greatest technology that was out there and poured it into that plant. That was in 1985. So it's relatively new. It was built as a high-tech plant, except the technology wasn't up to the expectation of General Motors investment. But it ran. It made Cadillacs for a while. Whatever they gave those folks from Detroit to make in that plant, they did. And quite frankly, I am just astounded that they didn't want to put work in that plant in terms of their investment. They kept changing the product in that plant almost continuously, and no matter what they gave those people to do, they did it. And here about 2 years ago, they went to three full shifts, John, and they hired all these people in for a third shift. They said, we've got a product here, like Scott and I were talking about, and so we're gonna run this thing three shifts a day, and God is in his heaven, and all is good with the world. And I don't think it was 14 months later they laid off the third shift and threw those people out in the street. I don't know why. It's got good rail. It's next to a freeway. There's a workforce available to the plant. It's not an old, ramshackle, run-down plant. And yet they have purposely avoided putting a long-term product with a commitment, a high, like an SUV, into that plant. And now that plant goes on the hit list. And by the way, comma, in the Detroit News, Elon Musk from Tesla is now saying he's looking at these five facilities that GM has, and he may be interested in buying one of them.
Yep.
To make cars.
Well, they'll definitely shut down one of the oldest. They're going to use it as a bargaining chip, and it's disgusting to me. And I know a lot of us have been trying. We've been fighting against the corruption, and we've been outspoken about it. And I'm starting to see progress at my plant, but I don't think it's fast enough.
Which is your plant, John?
Dundee Engine Plant.
Oh, that, I'm sorry. You told me that once. Dundee, right.
Yeah. Which we did just have a good thing happen there this last meeting that we had. But anyway, getting back to my point, it seems like every contract they come up with this stuff to try to sway public opinion in their favor, and they will bombard us with their lies and propaganda, and they'll cry, oh, we've lost money. I don't see how it's a loss. You've made billions of dollars. Just because you didn't make the billions of dollars that you planned on making, that's not a loss. You made money.
Right.
And I'm hoping that this might be the trigger to start bringing not just the UAW together in solidarity, but all workers. That sooner or later, you know, we're going to all have to stand up and fight. We always praise our soldiers, and they go in there and they get the job done, while the rest of us who used to fight as Americans, we always fought for everything historically. We've gotten really soft. And sooner or later, you know, they can't keep making profits when people are making peanuts and can't afford to buy vehicles here.
Right.
Sooner or later, the workers are going to have to come together, and they're going to have to fight. All workers, not just the UAW.
You mean like they're doing in France right now?
Yes.
And actually, it just started in the Netherlands this week, in Holland.
Yeah. These corporations are the true enemy of the people. You know, sometimes it gets frustrating when I see stuff on Facebook. You know, you got these so-called conservative Second Amendment supporters that bash people that work at McDonald's or people that are on welfare. But those people have no power and effect over the rest of our lives. The people who actually are controlling things and pulling the strings don't get any blame whatsoever. That doesn't make sense to me. Somebody on welfare doesn't raise your taxes, doesn't cut your wages, but yet you blame them for not making enough money and for high gas prices.
doesn't make sense.
It's the corporations.
Right. And oh, the propaganda is brilliant.
Well, it's there's been some stuff written recently, John, about what's going on with M&A, mergers and acquisitions. Ford and Volkswagen just announced an alliance. They're going to hook up, Volkswagen and Ford. Now, Sergio Marchionne, about a little more than a year ago, said sooner or later, the Detroit three car companies are going to have to merge, either with each other or with other companies. Now, General Motors has a working agreement with Honda right now. General Motors also has their small van. When we were organizing Nissan a year or two ago down in Canton, Mississippi, they were making our Chevrolet small vans in that plant while we were trying to organize them. They were making Nissan vans and badging them as Chevrolet. We have a working agreement with Honda. Toyota and Mazda have a working agreement together down in a plant in Texas right now. Ford again is going with VW. And what we're seeing now is what Teddy Roosevelt railed against back in his day. There was anti-monopoly legislation. It still exists in our society, John.
But
unfortunately, our Congress is looking the other way. When we went through breaking up these big monopolies about 30 years ago, they're all back together again. There are many graphics on the website where you can look at a company and see the company in the center and all the other companies now that it owns. And so what's happening in the car industry, as I said, Ford, Toyota has hooked up with Mazda. We've hooked up with Honda. Ford is going with Volkswagen, and they're saying that they're going to build their electric vehicles here, either at the Chattanooga site or at an unnamed now plant that Ford has. And what they're talking about is Flat Rock, Ford Flat Rock, that was built by the Japanese, and the Japanese built Mazdas in there until that kind of went floppo. And so the Japanese moved out, and then Ford started building some cars in there, and now they've just laid off a shift in Flat Rock, and Volkswagen is talking about building electric cars here now. So they could well go into Flat Rock. So that's coming. These car companies, Marchionne was right. They have to come together because there really isn't a great significant difference between cars anymore. They all buy their parts and designs from the same suppliers. And as they come together, they get more powerful and they have more lobby money to go to Washington with. And Congress is not applying the anti-monopoly laws to these companies. And I don't just mean in the automobile industry either. And I understand what you're saying, and I agree with you 100%. I mean, for me, the industrial workers of America, there are about 900,000 of us. Most of them are in the supplier industry. When you look at all the OEMs, we are about 300,000 of almost 900,000 people that are industrial workers in the automobile industry. We're shrinking faster than the suppliers are because they're paying literally slave wages without much regulation.
Yep.
But it's my honest feeling that for the last 15 years now that he, and I'll address myself only to the Detroit Three at this point. The management of Detroit Three is basically running the culture in the plants is inhumane, sometimes even physically brutal now. And I'm not going to talk about UAW should do this and UAW should do that. I'm just talking what is, why it is, and how come people let it. I don't care about that. But it's becoming more and more inhumane to the point of, in some places, it's now brutal. And it began in the supplier industry, and they've been inhumane. And these managers go to these potential managers go take management classes and PhDs in industrial management, and these schools. These people are coming out of these colleges or going and getting their advanced degrees, where people like you and Scott, who are still in the plant and still working, when they come into your plant. General Motors, Ford, and Chrysler do not look at their workers as human beings anymore. You're just a cost item in a business plan. That's why they are time studying you down to the tenth of a second. There's no humanness provided for in their business model in the plants. When Mary Barris is talking about capacity utilization, and you start doing some research, you've got one company running a plant at 140% of capacity utilization. 140%. She's yapping about, well, if we can't run a plant at 80% of capacity utilization, we lose money. But she's got plants that are running at 100% and more. Now,
yeah, they did that to us too at Chrysler, and we were running our plant 7 days a week, and we were running well above our capacity. And the treatment of the workers has gotten worse. But that's my point. You know, sooner or later, as workers, we need to come together, and we need to stand up.
I don't disagree with you.
Yeah.
The treatment that people have been getting, let's just say since the 2015 contract was negotiated, put their head on, put their head down, and keep trudging along. They don't. First of all, it is not up to the dues-paying member to fight that fight inside the plant on a plant floor. That's what we have elections for committeemen for.
That's true. But with the weak leadership that we've had over the last, and it's gotten worse, and we've talked about it before.
I know where you're going, and I agree with you.
But, you know, it is going to have to change it from the bottom up. And it starts with the membership. And that's why, you know, I'm out on the floor. I work on the line every day. But I still get out there. I still talk to people on my own time. I still educate people and help people on my own time. And
right.
I still hold my representatives, my leadership, accountable, and I'm on them. Because that is part of our responsibility as a union member. We need to keep them honest, and we need to keep them, and we need to keep demanding that they give us their best.
The problem with what you're not wrong in anything you said. The problem is, like, when I was a committee man and I got elected, I had 320 skilled trademen in 7 different buildings. My responsibility was taking care of them.
Right.
I always used to say there are 2 kinds of people who run for office. Those that run to get power and control, and those that run for the privilege to serve. And the second category is a very small percent, even in my time. But my attitude was this: if something isn't right for any of those 320 people, that's what I was there for. If they wanted to fight, then they would have run to be the committee man. They got a job. Their job is to go in there, do their prescribed job, get their paycheck, and go home. If they want to fight, then they run for office. Now, I understand that there are people. Some guy just 2 days ago said, I'm not going to run for office because I'll get blown away. And that's why I liked your meme that you put up. Then keep going back to the well. I don't understand what that means, blown away. But it has to happen on a shop floor. I see what you're saying is the people, if they're not interested in fighting or don't want to fight for whatever their reason is, then they give their 1/250th of power in that district to the guy that they elect. They just want to do their job and go home. And now,
right,
things are very changed today because there's so much insecurity and anxiety in the workplace. I mean, when Don Couch and I were working in a plant, there was no fear of losing your job, not to the degree it is now, and we had time to stop and talk for two or three people. I mean, when Don Couch was running around checking frames, he still had time to talk to people.
Yes.
But the guy who's got Don Couch's job today is clocked down to the part of a second. I don't believe that guy's got time to talk to people.
Don't either.
That's what's changed in Don and I's world and the world that you guys live in now. And I understand that you take your time. You see, you guys have got to fight. The guy you're talking to, he's clocked in down to 1 second. He may have 1 to 3 seconds between tasks. And that goes on for the whole 8-hour workday or whole 10-hour workday. That was not the world that Don and I worked in. We had time
right to
talk. I could work up the line. When I was on a brake assembly line, I could work up the line and find myself 15 seconds out of every minute. And me and the guy on the other side of the line, we had 15 seconds to talk. I would just
work up
the line to the guy to my right, that's all. And then
hurry up
and get mine done to the line speed. That's gone.
We have about a minute and a half left.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No.
Wow, that went by quick. All right, we can't give up. Those that are willing, you need to fight. You need to run. Never give up.
Right.
I believe in this union. I believe in the people. I just think that it's going to take those of us that are willing, it's going to take more of us to come forward and to put forth a little bit of extra effort, because it will be worth it in the long run. I know it will.
Right.
I am making strides in my plant. We just did a good thing. We may be able to talk about that next time, but I'm pretty excited about it. The membership did come together. I actually got the entire shift to fill every seat in the unit meeting, which is a first.
Congratulations.
Many months. So it's one man can make a difference in each plant, and I'm
right
trying to do my part in mine.
Right. Real quick, here's the timeline going, because we do have the holidays coming up. Real quick, I want to tell you, if you get a chance, Ohio Representative Tim Ryan delivered just a passionate speech about the GM closures on the House floor. You can find that on C-SPAN if you get a chance. Listen to it. It was a great speech. Grand politician. We are going to do a show next week on the 15th. And then our next show will be January 6th. So it's a full 2 weeks off, and on that third week out, we'll do a show again, which is the 6th. So we'll do a show next week, and then back on January. Anybody else getting to add?
Have a good week. Be safe.
Yes,
and,
be safe.
And we'll see you all next week. Yes. Dick?
Have a good week. Scott, John, and the rest of the gang, have a great week. Be safe. Good night, everybody.